Brand of Justice by Luke Short. The crowd had missed supper to hear the verdict, and now it poured out of the Masonic Hall into Sligo's main street, hungry and disgusted and in a surly temper. The Jake Van Every Mining Company had lost its suit against the huge Union Mining and Milling Company, and Sligo did not like it. Jim Trimble, in his big fist a piece of raw newsprint filled with notes of the trial, thrust his way out the door. He was a tall man, young, with overwide shoulders, and his trousers were tucked into half boots that were scuffed and unpolished. There was something about his quick, harried blue eyes and the taut look of his browned face that told an observer he hadn't much time for the amenities lately and didn't miss them. Scarcely a dozen steps away from the hall, he was brought to a halt by a tangle of men clotted on the boardwalk in front of Miller's assay office. A girl was backed into the doorway there and was being heckled by a group of rough miners.
"That's a right pretty red dress, miss. I bet it costs more than my wages for 2 months."
"Why, heck, her old man can earn a dozen of them in a day just by sitting still and letting big minds steal the little ones."
Jim elbowed his way through the knot of sullen onlookers to the inside of the circle. The girl he recognized as Judge Walcott's daughter, Julia.
Maybe I ought to rub that dress a little and find out if it's silk."
The miner stepped past Jim Trimble and started for the frightened girl, holding up his muddy hands. Trimble caught him by the elbow and whirled him around.
"Maybe you'd better take my word for it that the dress is silk."
"You're on the Union side too, eh?"
"A man that says that is a liar. I just don't believe in picking on a man's women folks, mister, no matter what I think of him."
He shoved the man into the crowd. Then Jim turned to the girl.
"You should have had better sense than to come out tonight. Come along, I'll take you home."
Without a word, the girl fell in beside him as he made a way through the mob. She came just to his shoulder. He had seen her about town many times with her father. Only then she looked a little proud and disdainful, as if she hated this rough world of the boom camp. But tonight she was frightened, and somehow it made her seem more human. He was surprised to see that her hair, which he had always remembered as brown, was a deep honey color piled high beneath her absurd little hat. At the Exchange Hotel, the pride of this raw mining camp, they turned into the lobby, which was just filling up with the crowd from the trial. Only this was a different crowd, flashy with easy money, not poor. Julia Walcott paused at the foot of the wide red-carpeted stairs.
"Why do they hate me so?"
"It's not you. It's your father they hate."
"But why?"
"Why, around here, we've got the old-fashioned idea that a judge should be impartial. Your dad used to be, and he isn't now, that's all."
"Well, that's a lie. Either prove it or apologize."
Jim looked over the lobby. Here were the men who owned the big mines in Sligo, the stock promoters from San Francisco, the men who were the wealth in this town. They were the men he had been fighting in his newspaper these last weeks, fighting with all the power he had. And tonight he knew they had beaten him.
"Miss Walcott, have you ever heard of a silver ledge?"
"No."
"It's where they find silver in ore. These ledges go deep into the ground, thousands of feet. Only they don't go straight down. Lots of times they angle off. The Union Mining and Milling Company is working a ledge now that has angled off until it has got over the boundary line of the Union claim onto the claim of a relatively poor man. That man, Jake Van Every, brought it to court because he believed the Union was looting his ore."
"And Dad ruled the Union wasn't?"
"Not your dad, the jury."
"Then what is your quarrel with Dad? A judge can't decide a case."
"But he can order evidence stricken out that is perjury. He can declare a mistrial when he has cause, and he can issue a restraining order closing down the Union until this case is settled. He turned this camp over to the robbers."
"Well, I don't believe it."
"I didn't think you would. Good night."
"One more question. What right have you to criticize a man whose profession you don't understand?"
"All the right in the world. I own the Sligo Herald, Miss Walcott, and I'd rather turn up an injustice like that than a gold mine."
He turned on his heel, his wrath unchecked, and left her. Almost to the lobby door, he paused and stepped aside to let a group of men pass him. Judge Walcott, his thin, fine face pale with fury, strode through the wide door, accompanied by an armed bodyguard. Also in that group of men were Miles Overman, the superintendent of the union, and Big Chig Henry, his assistant. The sight of them brought a wry smile to Jim's face. Overman saw him, saw the smile, and fell away from the group that was marching toward the stairway. The barrel-chested man, big for a country of big men, Miles Overman had a kind of brashness about him that he wore like a banner.
Decided to take your beating, eh, Trimble?
What beating?
Oh, I thought you'd been trying for 2 weeks in that rag of yours to start a lynching party against the Union.
Yeah, I'm not very lucky.
How long can you hold out, Trimble, now that all your advertising has stopped?
Long as I can get paper.
I saw about that. Your credit ain't good anymore with the paper people.
Yeah, I know. They wrote me. But I've still got enough left to beat you robbers. And Overman, don't lose your head and try to wreck my plant, because I'll kill you.
Once outside, he found he hadn't realized how angry he was. But now it came over him in a sick wave of fury. The taste of defeat was bitter in his mouth. He had jumped into the thick of the fight, taking Van Every's side, because it was simple justice to him. But in a short time, Jake's claim would be worthless, gutted of its ore. Since Judge Walcott, whose name had always been a byword for honesty, would not issue an order to cease operations until the case was appealed. Jim wondered in his anger what had come over Judge Walcott. Ahead of him, Jim saw Hugo Fayette turn in at Price's Kino Parlor, and on an impulse, he followed him. Fayette was a little drunk. Jim casually came up beside him at the bar.
Trying to wash the taste of the trial out of your mouth, Hugo?
Fayette straightened up, a small, wicked light in his eyes. For a brief second, Jim thought he was going to fight, and then the light died. He made no more response. He reached in his pocket, brought out a banknote, and laid it on the bar. The bartender looked reprovingly at Jim and picked up the bill. He examined it closely, turning it over and over.
What's this? It's a banknote. Same as money.
Sure, Barney. Didn't you read in the paper about the banks turning $20,000 in new banknotes over to the union? They were going to pay their men in banknotes, but the men wouldn't take them. All except Fayette.
If you think I ever took pay from the union except for what I sold them, you're a liar.
Hugo slapped a paper down on the bar.
I sold 70 mules to the union yesterday. There's a receipt. They paid in bills.
Sure.
A wave of weariness and disgust flooded over him as he turned and went out. He might suspect that Fayette had been bought by Overman, but he was having trouble trying to prove it. He made his slow way up the street to the small office of the Sligo Herald and slumped down into his rickety chair. This was how it felt to take a licking. There was no sensation at all, not even one of despair. His creditors were slowly closing in on him, and by his stand against the union, he had alienated the sources of revenue in the town. He was finished. He thought of Julia Walcott, remembering her face, grave and clean and angry. She wouldn't be a party to shifty business like this, but her father was. Or was he? A stack of newspapers from the other frontier towns lay on the desk before him. He might as well turn out the exchange news tonight, rewriting the news from the territory that might interest his subscribers in Sligo. It was while he was doggedly reading the Argus from Fort Clifton, the army town on the other side of the Tuano Peaks, that something started to tick in the back of his head. There was a story on the front page.
Army Ramuda raided again.
It went on to tell that 12 more mules had been stolen from the Fort Clifton Ramuda, a common enough frontier story. Jim settled back in his chair, looking at the ceiling and thinking it was funny that Hugo Fayette had sold the union some mules yesterday, just after some mules had been stolen from Fort Clifton. Jim was still tingling with excitement over that coincidence when Judge Walcott and his daughter stepped into the office from the street. Jim rose slowly as Walcott crossed to the desk. He had a long, sallow face, bisected by a black saber mustache, and his eyes were as dark as Julia's.
My daughter told me of a conversation she had with you tonight. I'd like to hear you repeat it to me.
If she told you that I once thought you were a fair man, and that now I think you're prejudiced, unfair, and not even interested in the justice of the case, she covered the ground pretty well.
You intend to print that?
Naturally.
It's libel. And I'll close this paper down with a court order so quickly it'll take your breath away.
You wouldn't close the union until the appeal, Judge, but you'll close me. I reckon it depends on who you favor, doesn't it?
Well, that's not so.
Jim looked at Julia with contempt in his eyes, then shuttled his glance back to Walcott. The judge was making a visible effort to control his fury.
I won't hide behind a court order. If you libel me, I'll shoot you down like the dog you are.
That's a date. Next Thursday.
I warned you.
Julia Walcott hesitated a moment, regarding Jim with puzzlement in her dark eyes.
You think you're right, don't you?
I do.
Then be sure you're willing to die for it.
Jim settled back slowly into his chair, surprised by this girl's spirit. She was beautiful, even in her rage, but she was wrong. So very, very wrong. Then, as if something had decided him, he rose again.
I'm going to bust this town wide open, or I'm going to be buried here. It's one or the other now.
The shaft house of the Union Mining and Milling Company was a quarter way up the Tuanos that towered behind Sligo in giant shoulders of sun-blasted rock. He found McGuire, the night super, at the desk in one corner. He seemed surprised to see Jim.
You're in Indian country, son.
Nobody shot at me yet. Listen, Mac, I'm writing a piece for the Herald on the Union. I want to see how far you've gone. Can I go down?
Well, whatever stinks down there, and some of it does, you know already, I reckon, Jim.
McGuire led the way out to the half-covered shaft where the cable timbers loomed up in a dark tangle. Jim stepped into the cage. Then the earth seemed to drop out from under him. At last, the cage slacked speed and came to a stop at one of the lower galleries. Jim stepped out, lantern in hand. After a short search, he came to a crosscut that was wider than the others, with a timbered floor, the stable. Inside, the only light, a turned-down lantern, were a dozen mules facing a long manger. These animals, for the rest of their lives, would work and eat and sleep in this dank gloom, nearly 1,000 feet from sunlight, hardly missing their other life. Jim worked swiftly. Taking the lantern, he moved in among them and began one by one to examine their brands. He had a sudden suspicion that he was a fool and on a fool's errand, but he kept at it. And then, the third from the last mule he came to, he found what he was looking for. He turned away then, smiling, and quickly made his way toward the shaft. He took an oar, skipped to the surface, and faded into the night. There was a look of grim and cool satisfaction on his face as he headed back for town, and Malloy's. Malloy's was a shabby boarding house just off the main street, a slab affair of 24 airless cribs that flanked a corridor off a greasy-smelling dining room.
Fayette in yet?
Ed Malloy nodded.
Yeah, fifth on your right.
Jim struck a match inside the room and lighted a blackened kerosene lamp. Fayette, fully clothed, lay on the bed, his breath filling the room with a stench of liquor. Jim took the bucket of water from the washstand and doused it on Fayette.
Stand up, Hugo. We're taking a trip to the closest U.S. Marshal. When I tell him what I know, I think he'll twist your head off.
What are you talking about?
Those mules you stole from the army over at Fort Clifton.
They were bought!
Well, if they were, why the hair branding that changed that U.S. on the left shoulder to a J-8? You've been playing this game a long time, Fayette. Selling stolen mules to the Union to put underground where nobody would ever see their brands, and the men who did wouldn't care.
Fayette's glance shuttled to the washstand where his holstered gun lay.
Don't make a try for it. Just pull your boots on.
You'll never get away with it. The Union will back me up.
You fool, the Union will sell you out. All they have to say is that they didn't know the mules were stolen and you'll stand trial alone.
Did Overman say that?
He didn't. You want me to go to him so you can prove it yourself?
The question was intentionally framed that way, and Fayette, even in his fright, saw an alternative.
Then you ain't going to the marshal?
Not unless you crowd me to it. You were paid big money to hang that jury, weren't you?
The man's lips tightened stubbornly. Jim took Fayette's gun from the washstand and leveled it at him.
Were you paid?
$5,000.
Who paid you?
Overman. He was pretty sure of Walcott, but he wanted to be dead sure.
Was Walcott bribed?
No.
I'm taking you to Judge Walcott. Tell him your story and then clear out of the country and clear out fast.
Overman will kill me!
Maybe. Want to take a chance on missing him? Or would you rather go up for 10 years for horse stealing?
I'll take the chance.
Under Jim's gun, he pulled on his boots and they started for the exchange. As they entered the lobby, Jim glanced toward the cluster of chairs behind the big window. Overman was sitting there, his back to them. Jim increased his pace. If Overman saw them, there would be trouble.
Trimble!
Jim paid no attention to the call. He could see the sweat beading on Fayette's brow. They hurried to the judge's room. When the door opened, he was facing Julia Walcott. Without a word, he shoved Fayette past her, then stepped in. They were in the sitting room. Judge Walcott had risen from his chair. Julia, outraged, stood beside Jim.
I haven't much time, Judge. This is Hugo Fayette, foreman of the jury. Overman gave him $5,000 to hang that jury and van every suit against the union.
Is that true?
Every word of it?
That's Overman.
Slowly, the judge's face hardened.
Let him in.
Miles Overman stalked into the room, his glance settling on Fayette, who cringed.
You're under arrest, Overman. Fayette says you bribed him to hang the jury in the Van Every case.
He lies.
We'll go into that later. You are under arrest.
Overman's eyes were busy. He looked at the judge's face, then at Fayette, and finally at Jim. Then his gaze shuttled back to the judge.
And if it's true?
A mistrial will be declared, and this time the bench will issue a writ closing down the union. Moreover, you'll never get a jury in this country again that won't render a judgment in favor of Van Every, Overman. You tried to buy off justice once. You will never find it again.
And if there's nobody to testify to the bribery?
It was Jim who first caught the meaning behind those words. His hand streaked toward the gun in his waistband, but the gun sight caught in the lining of his trousers. At the same time, Overman's gun slid out of its holster and swung hip high in a tight arc toward Fayette. Jim finally brought his gun up as Overman's pistol swung around toward him. A look of amazement crept into Overman's face, and he raised a hand to his chest. Jim dropped his gun and turned to Julia. He put an arm around her and led her into the next room. Jim guided Julia to the bed, and she sat down. Her face was buried in his shoulder. The warmth of her closeness to him was intoxicating. After a long time, Judge Walcott entered, a weary and beaten old man.
I owe you my profound apology and thanks, Trimble, as does my daughter. You not only saved our lives, but you saved me from the biggest mistake of my lifetime. I thought that I was a just man. I find I am not. In my eagerness to see this country grow, to bring wealth and prosperity to a desert, I played into the hands of crooks. I mistook power for progress, wealth for right. I forgot to be human, Jim. I won't do that again.
Julia sat up straight, and Jim, embarrassment in his face, took his arm from around her and started to rise.
Well, sit still, Jim. I was beastly, Jim. You see, I sat through the last of the case. And what you said about Dad was true. I knew it. But I couldn't be disloyal to him, could I?
No. I understood that. And I believed in your dad, too, or I wouldn't have brought Fayette here.
Oh, believed? Why?
A man doesn't get that loyalty from a thoroughbred unless he's worth it.
Oh, I'm gonna cry again, Jim.
Yeah, go ahead and cry. I reckon I'll see you plenty of times when you aren't.
Oh, I know you will.